You're listening to The Christian Book Show. Real authors, real discussions, real issues. Books are about ideas. As believers, our ideas ought to be better. Our stories more compelling. We're here to spread ideas that lead to life. Our Savior made the religious establishment nervous and gave hope to the common people. We're here to do the same. Christian authors, leaders, and influencers share their message. Let's talk to the author. Hi, folks. I'm here today with Chris Maxwell, and Chris is the author of Pause for Pastors, among other books. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about and talk to Chris about, because this month is October and it's Pastors Appreciation Month. Although we probably ought to appreciate our pastors 12 months out of the year instead of just trying to remember 1 month out of the year. But Pause for Pastors is the third book in his Pause series, and an important book because it's two pastors, and pastors are a group of people that don't often get ministered to. They spend all their time ministering. If you don't know about Chris Maxwell, let me tell you a little bit about Chris. Chris Maxwell joined Emmanuel College in Franklin Springs, Georgia, as a director of spiritual life and campus pastor after pastoring Orlando, Florida for 19 years. Chris and his wife Debbie, who's an elementary school teacher in Georgia, have three grown sons, Taylor, Aaron, and Graham. Taylor is a singer-songwriter, and he lives with his wife Brittany and their three children in Denver. Aaron and his wife Amber just moved to Dakar, Senegal in West Africa, and just had their first son Beckett. So I'm sure the Maxwells are tickled over that. And their youngest son Graham is an assistant basketball coach at Emmanuel. Chris speaks around the world in churches, retreat centers, conferences, and medical conventions, and has written 7 books. 4 of those are in the Pause series, and he's written thousands of articles and reviews and curriculum and poetry, commercials and speeches for various magazines and publishing companies and websites and newspapers. Chris, this is not the first time we've been together, and what I haven't told people is not only are you a great author, you're a really, really good friend.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that, and I'm honored to be your friend and to be an author for you.
Chris, the most pressing reason that we're talking about Pause for Pastors is it is Pastors Appreciation Month, and I want folks to understand, first of all, that Pastors Appreciation Month even exists, and secondly, you know, one option that we can recognize our pastors in a practical way and in a way they don't often get. Buying a pastor a tie for Pastors Appreciation Month is a nice thought, but probably isn't something unique that he can carry with him the rest of his life. On the other hand, sometimes I've seen are unique and they probably do carry them with them the rest of their lives. But Pause for Pastors is really a wonderful gift that speaks directly to pastors. You are qualified for this. You're a pastor for 19 years full time, and right now you serve at Emmanuel College. And you serve, in addition to your administrative role there, your educational role there, you serve as the pastor for students at Emmanuel. Isn't that right?
Yes. Spend a lot of time with students one-on-one, and I'm pastoring them. And a lot of the students are going into some form of ministry, so I'm pastoring those who will become vocational pastors. But I'm just pastoring so many people who are desperate for pastoral care.
And those are students, or mostly students, or are those adults too? How does a campus pastor work?
Well, it's an interesting role, and I love it, Steve. It means so much to me to be here in this seat in the bus of Kingdom Work, because I am focusing primarily with students. But if you're doing that, you're also dealing with their families, with the faculty and staff. And then as I travel and speak all around the world, I'm speaking in churches where there are pastors there who are wounded and hurting. So God just has me in this place now where I can be just a little voice of encouragement for many people who need a pastoral heart. But now that I'm spending so much time with pastors and those who are either going into ministry or who have been in ministry for a long time, or many now who are burned out from ministry and do not know what to do with that tension, I'm there to listen and love and give some encouragement to them and to help them pause and not rush through all that they are doing for God so much that they forget to take time to just be with God.
Wow. I would guess that you being a traditional pastor for 19 years, but you not being in that role anymore as a traditional pastor, it kind of gives you a unique position or a unique platform from which to speak to and minister to pastors, because you've been in their shoes. And on the other hand, you're not really in their group now as a traditional pastor, but you've been in their shoes. And sometimes, I hate to say it, that groups tend to take to heart more the advice of somebody that's not in their group but's been through that. Do you ever see that when you're out speaking?
Yeah, and I have no ulterior motive. I can speak to a pastor about his personal issues, but I don't want his position in his church. You know, this is not like a competition. I'm a safe player in this game of ministry. I spent 5 years as a youth pastor before I planted a church, and I know what it's like to function in a church that is new and alive, but also as a youth pastor learning how to deal with pastoral issues and staff issues and learn what vocational ministry is like. And then so many years of pastoring and being plant churches and send people out as missionaries and functioning in that role for so many years, but then now kind of stepping back a little bit, being able to look from the perspective of an outsider who has been an insider, whose heart is still inside that world of ministry, but I can listen to their hurts and care for them, cry with them, and ask them questions that maybe if I was in another position, that I wouldn't be the right one to ask those kind of questions. So they can answer them with total honesty, and I can be there and be like a counselor in many levels to those who are in ministry but are struggling, carrying this heavy, heavy weight of doing too much for too many people too much of the time.
That's puts you in a really unique position, Chris. I remember when the book first came out, and there was a press release, and it was titled Pastors Need Pastoral Care. And it said, Pastors Guide Others Through the Storms of Life. Who do they turn to for pastoral care? And I think that is a thing we don't think about, really. I don't think we think, we assume the pastor's there to take care of everybody else, but I don't think it ever enters most of our consciousness that the pastor needs to be taken care of, needs to have somebody to go to be a pastor to them too.
And that's one of the first questions I ask pastors when I'm talking to them is, who is it that you are comfortable talking to? Where is that setting that you can unload your pain? Stephen, think about, again, the subtitle of the book, Pause for Pastors. It's Finding Still Waters in the Storm of Ministry. And we chose that because this is a different book. It's not the typical book that is for pastors. Most of the books for pastors are related to the newest trends and how to do the coolest new thing in church or something on the scholarly academic theology side or the practical new trends in ministry side. But this is inviting pastors to find the still waters, not escapism, not running from ministry, but right in the middle of the storm of ministry. We believe that God is helping us find still waters in that place. He can bring peace to pastors and to their spouses and to their children in the middle of the tension of how can I get all this done in a short amount of time? How can I preach the best sermon possible? How can I listen to all of their hurts and people are mad at me after I was there to help them? And all of that tension that's there, we believe that peace from the Father can also be there.
You bring up a really good point, Chris, and that's number one, that pastors don't have anybody to turn to. And we see we see a lot these days, a lot of pastoral burnout of pastors just quitting. And we see too many these days of these spectacular failings in public or spectacular failings that become public, whether it's moral or you know, some kind of scam or something where somebody just went too far and they, you know, tried to cover it up. And do you think a lot of that comes from, or a lot of that could be prevented by pastors just having some kind of safety valve, some kind of person to talk to, some kind of set of guidelines to say, hey, this you're a person just like everybody else. this is what you need to do to make sure you survive and you make sure your family survives as a pastor.
Yes, and many of them feel like there is no safe platform. There is no safe person. They're not safe ears that they can talk to and tell their stories to. I challenge pastors as I speak at these conferences and these minister groups that you need to be able to not carry the luggage yourself. Find those who will be with you to move from the singular to the plural. Let's be a part of a community. Find someone that you can talk to about your inner struggles, your pain. Because, Steve, we put on these masks so often of perfection, of performance. But deep inside, the reality is pain. The reality is I do not know how to do what I believe God has called me to do. Who is there to help me? And we are strongly encouraging those in this audience of pastors or missionaries or those who are going to be pastors or those who were formerly in a pastoral role, but maybe they have given up to save their marriage, to save their life. We want them to embrace that healthy tension of, yes, you are called by God to do that that appears to be impossible, but you do not have to do it on your own. Receive the strength that God wants to give you. But how do you do that? You spend time with Him, not as another duty or task, but in relationship with God. So you're not just opening up Scripture and putting together this biblical text, the deep study, and then preaching it on a Sunday morning service, but you're embracing the Word and letting it come into your life, letting it bring healing to you, understanding it in this way. I call it holy selfishness. So instead of just taking care of everybody else, we choose to let God take care of us in a holy, selfish way that we spend time alone with the Father. And then with those few people that are a part of our accountability group or our Christian counselor or our family, we can just embrace it. And then we just choose to do other things that are not related to ministry at all. We laugh. We play games. We just have fun in life together. So everything is not structured around this format of how many people did you have in your church on a Sunday? How many new members do you have? What were their tithes and offerings? What is your new building program? What's next? What is your strategy? Sometimes our best strategy is to be led beside the still waters in time with the Father.
Amen. I grew up the son of a pastor and very involved in churches. And there was this sense of professionalism. And what I mean by that is the sense that he or we were at work when in the ministry. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, mm-hmm. It was ministry to the seats. It was a ministry to the people in the chairs, the congregation. But it was never considered ministry to us. It was considered we were at work at that time. So there was this, mm-hmm. this division that professional idea kind of kept us from experiencing that ministry ourselves. And I think you're absolutely right that the root of a pastor's vocation has got to be the root of his personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And, mm-hmm. and that has to be really maintained. It's almost like an athlete maintaining his body or a great mind maintaining his mind or her mind is that's your key to your, not mm-hmm. just your survival, but your service. And so often that's the thing that pastors tend to sacrifice in your chapter eight, Dying and Living. You talk about some of those things that pastors should do. And let me just read a paragraph in the beginning of the chapter, because I want to give the listeners a little bit more depth on you. I want to give them a facet of your life that profoundly affects your work now. It is a facet of your life that actually paints the person you are now, if that makes yeah. sense. It's a facet of your life that allows you to communicate in a more unique way than not only you communicated before this happened, but than other people would normally communicate. Let me read this chapter or this paragraph. They asked me to speak to a group of ministers, various ages, backgrounds, denominations, and years of experience. The topic was survival. In the first session, I told the story of my illness and how I, my family, and our congregation survived. The next two sessions were about the survival for all of us in ministry, whatever our story, whatever our illness, whatever our congregation. And when people invite you to speak at pastors' conferences, they don't usually invite you on the topic, I don't imagine, of how to build giant numbers and big church bus programs and international television ministry programs. It usually has more to do with how pastors need to minister and care for themselves. Tell us a little bit about what you referred to when you're talking about your illness in this chapter, and then tell us a couple of the tips, or a couple of the, you call them confessions, which is great, tell a couple of the confessions you made to these pastors on how they need to pay attention to themselves in order to minister better.
Yeah, so many of the places that I'm invited to speak, they want me to talk about more than a ministry trend or what works or doesn't work. They want me to tell my story, and not just my story of pastoring, but a story that has helped me have an even deeper heart of pastoral care, and that is what happened to me in March of 1996. I had been pastoring for many years. I was very healthy. I was coaching our sons in sports. I was writing curriculum. I was just busy doing everything. And I'd never been sick, and all of a sudden that changed drastically in March of 1996. I became very ill. They put me in the hospital, and Steve, they did not think I would live. They thought I was not going to live, but they finally were able to determine that I was dying from encephalitis, and God met with us there, and he did save my life, though I am a changed man. I'm not the man that I was pre-illness. The post-illness stress is now living with severe brain damage. I have scar tissue in my left temporal lobe, and I now live life with epilepsy. But how does that fit what we're talking about, the dying and the living, the pause for pastors? It's because my life took a different kind of pause. I had to hit pause, not intentionally. It was a part of my new life. They had us on the 700 Club, and my wife Debbie called me her second husband because I changed so much. And so for my wife, for our children, for our family, for our congregation, and our many friends, that the Chris that they had was gone, and I was a new Chris. But God used my pain, my wilderness, the darkness, my scars to remind me of the beauty of his love, that he was with me in the moment, in the hospital room, when they did not know if I would live. He was there to keep me alive as I slowly adjusted to my new life with brain damage and epilepsy. He was there. He is there. And so I had to think of life differently. Think about it in shorter segments. To learn how to pause, because if we are in too much of a hurry, doing and doing and doing instead of being, we miss the moments. I mean, we miss the wonder of each opportunity that is right there beside us. So some of the key points from my personal experience of pastoring, what I feel like I did right, is I had an accountability group. I had a group of pastors. We met regularly, and we did not talk about how many people came to church or what the coolest new song is or the newest trend. We asked each other the hard questions of, how are you really living life? How are you treating your wife? How are you and the kids getting along? Serious life questions. I also had a second career, even during my years of full-time as lead pastor of a local congregation. I was writing. And not just for the money side, but that was therapeutic for me, Steve. It was a way that my whole life was not centered around the local congregation or my vocation, my job. There's more going on. And also family. I had worked, before I became a lead pastor, I had worked with ministers who their whole life was surrounded by their vocation. It was like embedded in everything. And I did not want to live that way, so we made sure that we took time as a family. And sports is what worked well for us. I would coach and go to their ball games, so many things like that. Another thing that I believe was very important for me is, and I didn't do this soon enough. There are two things that I probably should have done sooner in ministry, but especially after the illness, I realized it was very good that I, number one, needed to take a sabbatical. The illness kind of forced one on me, but later, after I was healthy again and continuing to pastor the church in Orlando, I took a sabbatical, and it wasn't an escape. It was an entering into the presence of the Father. Another key point in that chapter and in life to me is when I started seeing a professional Christian counselor. My accountability group was great. My close friends were great. Our staff and the leadership team of the church, they were great. My family was wonderful. But seeing a professional Christian counselor who could listen to my pain, ask me the questions that nobody else was asking. See, that was so important. Those are all ways that pastors can pause in the middle of their hurried life of ministry and find peace and healing in the tension of the moment.
You just stepped out on a pretty shaky platform, Chris. Your last two recommendations, a lot of pastors would say, well, number one, isn't practical, and number two is just downright dangerous. And when you think about the idea of a sabbatical, especially mm-hmm. a profession like a pastor, when you talk about sabbatical, I'm assuming you're talking about something more than a 3-day weekend.
Yes.
So you're telling a pastor to plan a time where he's out multiple Sundays?
Yes. Oh, I can remember. I would love to, would love to tell you the whole story of the sabbatical I took. I was preaching that Sunday, and we had it all planned, and the board had agreed to this. I was going to be taking a month off, so this was my last Sunday there preaching until I would return, after a month away. And we had a guy in our church who had a motorcycle, and Steve, as right at the end of my sermon, I was talking about how I love you people. You mean so much to me. I love you, but I love Jesus more. And then we had the motorcycle come in, and I put on a helmet, got on the motorcycle with him, and then he took me out of the congregation. It was a fun thing, but it was a visual and a noisy reminder of, hey, we need to love our ministry and what we do, but we need to love him, the one that we do this for, much more. And we need time with him. And Steve, during that month, I had time with the family, with each of them individually. I had time away, just me and God alone, time of writing and journaling and deep study, and time of this. This is something that we all miss out on, that Paul invites us to do, time of nothingness. Because there is so much there. There are so many somethings in the nothing. And we often miss that, and a sabbatical it can help us do that. But also, even when we're not taking the sabbatical, choose to respect the Sabbath, not as a part of tradition, but a reality of the moment, where throughout each day we take just a Sabbath breath and notice the beauty around us. And sometime each week, it's not going to be the Sunday that's a 24/7 full speed, nonstop busy day for those in ministry, but we find a day when we can, it's a healthy escape. And it's not an escape in a negative way. It is entering back into the presence of the Father and being with the one who has not only called us to ministry, but being with the one who can actually do the ministry that he has called us to do. We can't do it in our own strength. And being away with him reminds us that he is the one we need.
You also talk about something that I think pastors might consider really dangerous. And that's, you say, I habitually saw a counselor. And I think we touched on this earlier, but a pastor is almost a person with two lives, his private inner life and his public life. And he's always on point or always under pressure to make sure that anything he does or thinks or says in his private life never stains his public life. And I can mm-hmm. see where that fear would be that thing that could lead to trouble, because there's no release. There's no one to say, hey, I'm struggling with this. I'm having a hard time with this. I've got to deal with this. And he's just got to keep it bottled up inside. And it builds to pressures that are not only unhealthy, but pressures that lead to downfalls. And if pastors would just understand that, that there is a safe place somewhere where they can be humans, there would be so much pain and so much tension to that, that wouldn't be necessary.
Yeah. And I love that. To me, moving into community where you can be open and honest with the right person in the right setting and have nothing to prove. We have nothing to prove. We can just be honest, be ourselves, deal with the deep inner issues that kind of move us toward unhealthy trends or habits or addictions. Maybe they can help us realize that some type of ministry push has become our substitute drug, that our high is attendance. Our high is performance. And that is not healthy. We need to be at peace in the moment internally and talking to someone that we can trust to help us identify those tendencies can move us toward those still waters in the storm of ministry. Wow.
Pause for Pastors, Finding Still Waters in the Storm of Ministry. It's got 30 chapters. Each chapter ends with a section that's called Read, Reflect, Receive, and Respond. This is a book for pastors. This book would really be a benefit to anybody in ministry or anybody that wants a deeper walk with the Lord. But it's a book especially for pastors. And here's the problem. Pastors won't normally buy a book for themselves if it's just for themselves. They'll buy a book on ministry. They'll buy a book on theology, on Bible study, on how to grow multi-million dollar churches, but they won't buy a book on themselves. So the only options that we have is people that are responsible for pastors, like bishops, like people in denominational management, or people that care for pastors, or the congregation that cares for their pastor. This is a book that should be in the hands of every single pastor. And unfortunately, most pastors will sacrifice buying themselves as something like this in order to buy something that would in their opinion, help grow their ministry more. So let me speak to you pastors first. Buy this book for yourself if no one else buys it for you. And let me speak to everyone else that's involved with the pastor. If your pastor won't buy them for himself, and he shouldn't have to, buy it for your pastor and give it to him as a gift. It'll not only help your pastor, it'll help your pastor's wife or your pastor's spouse. It'll help your pastor's children and family. But every pastor should have this book. Thanks for being with us, Chris. Real quick, tell people where they can find you online and learn more about you.
Go to my website, chrismaxwell.me. You can find me on Facebook. We have Pause with Chris Maxwell group on Facebook. And you can find me on Twitter at cmaxman.
C-Max Man. I like that. It's like a superhero. The book you can get the book on Chris's website. You can get the book on thechristianbookshow.com. You can get the book on Amazon. You can walk into a Christian bookstore and ask for Chris's books. Any way that you can get the book, but definitely get one. If you're a pastor, get it for yourself. If you're not a pastor, you better get it for your pastor before the pastor has to get them for himself. Thanks, Chris, so much for being on.
Thank you, Steve.
You've been listening to The Christian Book Show. To learn more about the author and the book featured in this interview, visit ChristianBookshow.com. No spaces, no dashes. That's ChristianBookshow.com for show notes on this interview. And be sure to subscribe so you won't miss the next interview.